Greetings in Jesus' name. It feels good to be here tonight. Let me show you my family. Morse put it on his computer today. This picture is a heritage that God has given us. And I feel like that I don't want my talk and my thing to take anything away from what Morse said. My mom is from non-Mennonite background. She did not grow up in a Mennonite setting. She come to the Mennonite church, and my dad and mom got married in the Mennonite church, and I have been given an excellent home. Not all was everything the same in our home. Because of mom's background, it influenced us as children. But I have been given a good inheritance. Megan is the oldest. She is 14. And then Drew's the next. And he's normally not that sober, okay? I guess he was having a sober thought right at that time. He loves to read. He loves to do... he's in the Bible memory program at our school that goes to the quizzing. He's on the quizzing team. He loves books, okay? It's very important to him that he's got plenty of books to read. The next is Elijah. He is 10, and he's kind of like his dad. He'd rather have his hands outside somewhere doing something in the dirt. He loves to work with his hands. He doesn't want to read. And that is a much distress to his mother. So he gets offered prizes for reading books. And then the youngest is Aaron. He's 4. He isn't spoiled. He's just much loved. I told you last night that we, as a family... do produce. And so I've taught school for many years. And while I teach school in the wintertime, I need something to do in the summertime. So since 2009, so if you do the math, Megan was the only child we had, we've done produce. And so in the summertime, we raise produce, take it to farmer's market, and sell it. We started out as we took a wheelbarrow load to market. And then as our children got older, they helped us. And I don't know, it was just, I guess I should give God the honor. God helped us. But today, I wouldn't trade my occupation for anything because I get to work with my family. We work together as a family every day of the week, every day. This morning, we was eating lunch, or getting ready to eat lunch. My daughter called me. She was at market. She needed to have some questions answered. Matter of fact, all 3 of the oldest ones went to market. So I'll give you a picture of what happens at our family at market, farmer's market, on Saturday morning. We only do 4 acres. Okay, so that would be like a pencil dot in Texas. Okay, we only grow 4 acres. It's nothing. I'm supposed to be able to make this a video. This is a picture of our stand at market. And so every Saturday, every Wednesday, and some days in between, if it works out right, we will go to market. And my family goes with us. Normally on Saturday morning, there's 3 or 4 of us that go. We raise tomatoes. That's one of our main crops. We raise melons. We raise strawberries. This is one that's probably in about July, I'm guessing. The children raise certain crops. Elijah raises eggplants. Drew raises peppers. They have their own crops that they raise, and they take to market to sell and get a percent of the income as well. Yeah, that's enough of what happens in my life. Tonight I'm going to talk to you about finances, and there are these 2 books that you will find in the back of the church. Oh, it didn't go shut. It didn't go closed. Thank you, Morris, for doing that. These 2 books, you pick them up if you have any interest in them. This book you should do if you are dating. Or if you're married, you should do this with your spouse, with your boyfriend or your girlfriend. It's a book that you work through. You write in answers. You discuss. It's from I think it's Lamp and Light. Yeah, Lamp and Light. And you can order more if there's not enough back there. This is even a good book for you to do as a family for, I don't want to say this, I don't want you not to read the Bible, but for family devotions. Read this. There are scriptures in here. Just take two chapters, maybe say twice a week. You have a chapter from here. This book, if you really, really want answers on certain things, this book uses scripture to back it up. I have read, I would say, 95% of this book, and I have found nothing that's false. I was going to bring another book along, and I think I left it out in the car. It's a book that of a financial class that my wife and I took right after we got married. It's by Dave Ramsey. Any of you familiar with Dave Ramsey? Oh, yeah, okay. I love Dave Ramsey, okay? I love listening to him speak. I've got one little problem. Do you know what it is? Those of you that raised your hand, can you guess? Well, one evening hearing me talk, the problem that I have with Dave Ramsey.
It's all about making money.
Okay, now I don't have a problem about the management. Okay. Yeah, I do have a problem with that one. You're right. I do have a problem with that one. It's about wealth and about making wealth. And, I don't know. Maybe God is going to give me wealth sometime in life. I really don't. Well, no, hang on. Let's go. Go to Proverbs 30. And I will read the text for this evening is Proverbs 30, verse 7 through 9. Now, please understand me when I'm talking. I'm not criticizing Dave Ramsey. I'll make that clear tonight. I'm not criticizing Dave Ramsey. We were in a financial situation, and my wife and I were. We could not make ends meet. And Dave Ramsey helped us make ends meet. So I give my hats off to Dave Ramsey. I'm not criticizing him. Agar is a man that it's assumed that he would have been Solomon's counselor. He would have counseled Solomon. He would have worked with Solomon. And it's assumed, okay, we do not know where Agar came from. But he wrote the last two books in Proverbs. And so he must have been a man that was associated with Solomon somehow. And he understood. He saw the splendor and the wealth that no other man has ever had before Solomon's time. And in verse 7, he is making a prayer. And that's where I'll start tonight. He says, two things have I required of thee. This is God. Deny me them not before I die. So he must have been old. He must have been at the end of his life or close to it. Verse 8, these are the two things. Remove far from me vanity and lies. And the second thing is what I want to talk about. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be fool and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. Sometimes I pray, God bless me. God, make ends meet. God, give me money. I don't want to be poor. But I'll assure you that I haven't prayed as often in my life. Now, don't make me rich either. And that's the problem that I have with Dave Ramsey. He emphasized building wealth. And he's got a good thing. It's about giving. I'll talk about that tomorrow night. The title tonight I would like to talk about. Last night, spend wisely. God is the owner. Tonight, save diligently. You are the steward. I didn't bring my dollars tonight, but I brought my coins. These are certified by United States of America. They're from the World Monetary Reserve Exchange, so they are real. God is the owner of these coins. I brought them here tonight, but they're not mine. God is wanting me to save diligently. He doesn't want me to throw them around like I threw those dollar bills around last night and even lost one of them. One of you had to find it for me, believe it or not. He wants me to save these diligently. You know, Agar said, I don't want to have so much. I don't want to say so much that I forget who the owner is. On the other hand, he said, Lord, don't make me so poor that I steal and take the name of the Lord, the Lord's name, in vain. You know why he was saying that? Do you know that someone that steals is not trusting God to meet their financial needs? They're taking their needs in their own hands and they're stealing to meet those needs. It's not like they're trusting God. I want to talk about this later on, but in case I forget this, I want to say that we can steal from other people with the way we do our finances. We can steal from the government. We can steal from our employees if we're an employer, or vice versa. If we're an employee, we can steal from our employer. Let me tell you just one way. If you just show up for 2 minutes late for work, if you do that every week, at the end of the week, that's 10 minutes of time. Now, maybe you have to punch your time card, and I don't know, maybe that's that, then you don't steal. But that's one way. As an employee, I can steal from my employer. The first thing that I'm going to tell you about how to save money is to work. Now, I've been here just about one day, and I've observed a little bit, and I'm assuming that most of you have a job. I'm assuming that most of you that are able work. But you know, Genesis 3:19, it says, in the curse, it says, when God was talking to man, he says, in the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread till thou return unto the ground. God placed man in the Garden of Eden, and he didn't have to sweat. But he had to work. He had to work. Now, it wasn't the type of work that, you know, in Texas you do sweat. We do in Indiana, too. But it was easy to work. The curse brought the sweat. So work is a principle that was established before the fall of man. In 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 10, you know the verse. I imagine you've been told this as a child. At least my mom and dad told me this verse, and I have told my children many times already. This we command you, that if any man would not work, neither should he eat. My children can help us a lot in the produce patch. They can go out. My two boys can work, do more work than I can, if they are in the mood. If they're feeling like it. If there's a fishing trip promised at 3 o'clock, or we can go whenever we're done, they can outwork Dad. You see, I have told them that if you're not going to work, then you'll have to skip supper. Now, they all know that they probably wouldn't have to skip supper, but, you know, I tell them it's just going to be later till we get in to eat. The problem is today in the world, so many men, I don't know if ladies have this problem or not, they don't want to work. They want to make a living in fast, okay? So there's all kinds of plans, and there's all kinds of these advertisements of get rich quick. If you do this and this and this. And I don't know if you're plagued with this here in this community or not, but in our community, there's this little, you come to this supper. You come to a steak supper. And at this steak supper there, you're introduced to a plan of some kind. And it's called, it used to be called pyramid type of system, but now it's called multi-level marketing. So if anybody's involved in multi-level marketing here, I'll talk to you after service. Don't feel condemned. But it's a get-rich-quick deal. You don't have to work. All you have to do is do this, sell this, and sell this, and the money will come in. I think it's in this book here. You should read a story in this book here of how you send out a letter for $2 and how much money. And within a year's time, this story, you're a millionaire. Wow. In just a short period of time. And it works out on paper. It's marked out on paper in this book. You know, owning casinos is profitable. Owning casinos is profitable. I don't believe it's an honest way to make a living. As a Christian, God expects us to make a living. And you know, I can go out there and work every day, and the money doesn't come in real fast. But most of the time, whenever that money comes in fast, whether it's a lottery ticket, whether it's multi-level marketing, there's just tons of ways. When that money comes in fast, in 5 years down the road, those people don't have anything to show for anymore. It's gone. The slothful saith, there's a lion in the way, a lion in the streets. That's Proverbs 26, verse 3. The man says, it's too scary to go out and work. It's too scary. And I just had an illustration. I was coming home from market on Tuesday night of this week. And it was an evening market, 4 to 7, and it's about an hour away. So by the time I was almost home, I was within 5 miles of the house. It was dark. It got dark, and I was coming home, and I wasn't driving 75 miles an hour, okay, or 80. What is it here in Texas? I was just driving normal speed. There was cornfield on both sides of the road, or on one side there was cornfield, the other side there was a bean field, and just kerwoof, I didn't have time to brake. There jumped a deer out right in front of me, and just crash. And the deer went off the road, broke my headlight, broke the grill, mashed the bumper, messed up the radiator, intercooler, air conditioner, all that messed up. Oh, man. You know, I lost more money than if I'd have just stayed at home and throw the produce in the ditch. So I was thinking about this, you know, I should have stayed at home. Well, I don't know if I should go to work, you know, if I should go Saturday, or if I should send the children, my brother took them so they can't drive, because something worse could happen, you know? If I'd have known that deer was going to jump out in front of my truck and I was going to mess up the front end, I wouldn't have gone to market. So that's what the slothful said. It's too dangerous. Well, you know, the reality is I went to market 30, 40, 50 times this past summer and it never happened, you know? So you can't stay at home and say, I might have a wreck on the way to work. Or I might fall off the roof and break my leg. That's what the slothful man says. You've got to have a willingness to do it. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with a might, Ecclesiastic writer says. The sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold. Therefore shall he beg and harvest and have nothing. You know, the weather's not quite right. And those of you that farm, I don't know how many of you that do. I look at the weather very much. I want to know, is the weather going to be nice to set plants out? We set plants out on plastic. Is it going to be hot the next 3 days, or is it going to be cloudy and cool? It makes a huge difference whether the plant makes it or doesn't make it. So I can say, oh, it's not quite right. I'll wait till tomorrow. And then, oh, that looks a little scary. I'll wait again. No, you simply have to plant, and you can't wait around all day. The sluggard will not plow for the reason of the cold. It's just something's not quite right about the weather. Ruth, in Ruth 2:7, it says, she gleaned in the field unto even and beat out that which she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. You know how much that was? She went out behind the reapers and picked up one head of barley and put it into her bag. One head, one head, one head, one head, one head. She had an ephah. She, after she beat it out, got rid of all the the chaff. She had 7.5 gallons of barley left. I know why she worked till even. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of picking up. Now, maybe you know how the story goes. Maybe Boaz was throwing out a few whole bundles. I'm not sure. He said he was supposed to drop a few. Maybe that's the reason she got 7.5 gallons. There's an ethic that man needs to work so that he has something to show for. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Lazy people beg. Lazy people beg. And the Proverbs writer says, go to the ant, you sluggard. I already told you, start on time. I have a problem of running just to the last minute. But really, in reality, if you're going to work, try to be there 5 minutes early. It says something about your character. It will do something for you. Not only by being there on time will it make you maybe more money in your pocket, it will do something about you as a person just to be there on time. My day goes better when I don't sleep in. My day goes better when I start it early and get ahead of schedule rather than behind said schedule. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat much or little. If you work, you sleep well. The door, as a door turneth upon its hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. Squeak, 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 rolling around in bed. He can't sleep. He didn't do a day's work. I told you last night about the parables. Jesus talked about all the parables about money. I have to tell you about one tonight. I'm going to have to hurry here. The parable of the man with the talents. You can argue with me whether that meant money or whether that meant abilities. You know, you have a talent to sing. Okay? So a lot of people want to say this parable has to do about what God has given me. Well, if you really do the searching, and the best that I can figure out, that doesn't hold water. In the King James, it says talent. It really was money. The man had one talent, the man that had two talents, the man that had five talents. And a talent is about 10,000 denarials. And you say, how much is a denaro? You remember the story when Mary broke that precious bottle of ointment and washed Jesus' feet with that? And Judas said, it could have been sold for a denari. And then he goes on to say, which was a year's worth of labor. A year's worth of labor. So one denari was worth a year's wages. Here in the story, a talent is 10,000 denarii. So if you take a year, one talent, and divide it, let me see if I get my math correct here. You come up with that one talent would have been 33 years of wages in Jesus' day. So he gave this master, it's in Matthew 25, this master gave the one servant a lifetime of money. The other one he gave two lifetimes. You can tell me of people that have made double the money you've made in their lifetime. No problem. The other one he gave five times according to their ability. So that you know of people that have made five times as much money as you have. It's not hard to find. Well, I don't know. It's not hard for me to find people like that. Jesus gave each one the allotted amount. The one that just had one talent. Now, this is a talent of silver. If it was a talent of gold that he gave them, it would have been huge amounts. But it's assumed that in the story that Jesus was talking about, the man that had one talent. You see, the difference was whether the man used the money, worked with it, or whether he buried it. We are Mennonite people, and I assume that you are the same way. You have been taught to work. You have been taught to work. You have been given possibly more than one talent, one denario. You have been given two, if not five. How do you use it? How do you use it? How do you manage it? Don't be. The master's coming back. Okay? The master's coming back. Don't bury it. Use it. Spend it wisely and save it. I've read about books, and this is going to get me in trouble, okay? This is going to get me in serious trouble. But these books here will answer these questions, I think. I think we'll see as well. But I've read about books that say debt is wrong. Going in debt is wrong. And I've read the Bible, and I've read the Bible from cover to cover. I try to do it every year. I don't always get it done. Some years I don't. Some years I do. And I have never found the Bible says that debt's wrong. Okay? Maybe you can find it somewhere in the Scripture that's hid. I need to talk to you. But this is what I found. I found that in Deuteronomy 24, it says, when thou dost lend thy brother anything, thou shalt not go into his house to fetch his pledge. Okay? So if you lend your brother, you shouldn't go in and get a pledge or a down payment. I have noticed. No, I should read you. Hang on, I'm not reading you enough verses. Unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury, but unto thy brother thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee. Love your enemies, do good, and lend. That's Jesus' words. I think that if God is telling me to lend, he wouldn't want me to make someone else sin if borrowing is sin. Okay, so I'll make this simple. If I lend to you, God says, if you ask, I should lend. If you're my brother, I shouldn't charge interest. And I think that probably was under the circumstances of he was borrowing money for food. But he says, a stranger, you can charge him interest. I think it needs to be fair. But what he's saying, that you should lend to someone that needs to have means to live. Well, how can you say that debt is wrong and God is telling me to loan money to make my brother go in debt? It just doesn't make sense to me. But this is what I did find in the Bible. It says that the borrower is a servant to the lender. If you borrow from me, or if I borrow from you, I'm your servant. I have to do whatever you say. Did you ever go to the bank? And if you borrow from the bank, you are the bank's servant. Did you ever go to the bank and set the terms? Now, maybe they'll give you some options of terms. You say, that's too much interest. You're charging me too much interest. Why don't you lower that? The lender sets the terms. You are the servant. I know. I borrowed money. It just isn't in my lap to set the terms. I am the servant. So the Bible says, beware. I was going to read you another verse. The wicked, yes, Psalm 37, verse 21. The wicked borroweth and payeth not again. If you borrow money, if I borrow money, God says I need to repay it. Bankruptcy is not an option. I need to tell you about a man. There's a man in our community. He went bankrupt. He borrowed. He could not pay. He went bankrupt. He was not a part of our church at the time, but later he came to our church. I'm not sure how to say this. He was a Christian. He fell away. He recommitted his life to the Lord. He came back, and he says, came to our church. He says, I went bankrupt. And so through the counsel of other brothers in the church, they said, you need to settle those accounts. To the best of your ability, you need to go back and do that. And the man did. He went back to his creditors. He went back to the people that he owed money to. And he worked out a workable solution that he could pay off that debt. That's what God expects of us. If you borrow and do not pay, you are classed as the wicked. I should talk about different kinds of debt. I don't know if that's so important. Yeah, I'm going to. If you go to the bank to borrow money for a house, let's say you borrow money for a 200, how much houses cost in Texas? All makes a difference what kind of house you buy. Can you buy a house in Texas for $250,000? Can? Okay. Is that a nice house or a rundown house? Is it an old house or a new house? Pretty nice house? Okay. If you go to the bank, I don't know what the bank's going to say. They're going to say you have to pay, have at least $25,000. Is that right? You've got to have at least 10%. And I think it's maybe even higher than that, depending on, well, I've got a lot of collateral, maybe. If you've got 10 other houses, maybe they'll let you do this. I don't know. Do they give you options? Yep. How long a loan can you get? You know the terms.
30 years.
30 years. I needed that one. 30 years. Can you get anything shorter? You can? What's another common time term? 15. I like that 15 number. Let's go half. Okay? Going to the bank, going to borrow this money. What do you pay for interest?
Six and a
half. That's too hard. Let's go six. I love math, but six and a half is too hard to do here this fast. Okay, go to the bank. What do you think your payments are? We're going to go, which you want to go? I think I got both figures here. If I can find them. Yep. What do you think your payments are if you go 30 years?
$1,500.
Now, we got someone that knows what's going on here. 30 years is $1,349. $1,349. Do you know what anybody got an idea what it would be if you put this loan on a 15-year? Remember, we are borrowing $225,000 because we're going to put $25,000. So this is our debt. $225,000. If we're going to do it for 30 years, we're going to pay this much every month. It doesn't matter if you're sick or if you're not. You're required to pay this. On a 15-year loan, anybody want to tell me what you pay? Or guess? You're pretty good back there. Give me a shot.
I'd say
1899. These are a little bit rounded, okay? So don't go home and check me out totally. If you got one of those calculators on your phone, don't go interest calculator. They're just a little bit rounded. I wanted to do this because it's $550 more. So if you take the 30-year loan at 6% interest, you're going to pay this for 30 years. If you take the 15-year loan, you're going to pay this for 15 years. You're going to pay $550 more. At the end of the loan, regardless of 15 years or another, do you have any idea what you're going to pay for your house? Someone comes by and they say, what'd you pay for your house? Your best friend comes by and says, oh, you got a nice house here. What'd you pay for it? What are you going to tell him? $250,000. No, that's not what you're going to pay for it. If you pay off the 30-year loan, make every payment, make it on time, you're going to pay $485,636. That is the power of interest. If you pay this home off in 15 years, this is a 30-year loan. If you pay it off in 15 years, you will pay $341,762. So it depends on which plan you take is what you'll tell your friend that you paid for your house. That's almost $144,000 you saved. Okay, I'm wasting time here, but the point that I want to make with you is that you shall save diligently. Because I could take this loan, and if you would have saved $100,000, made these payments in advance for about 5 years before you bought the house, I don't care if you had to pay. You're paying $1,300 in this here. pay $500. Oh, maybe you're in Texas. Maybe you can't. At home, we can rent a house for $500 a month. Maybe you have to pay $1,000 here. That still saves you $349. You're surprised at the difference it makes. I want you to read a story in this book about two young people. And it's a made-up story. It tells you about two people in the church. And it tells you about the vehicles they bought. I'm not even going to go to the vehicle side of the story. Yes, I am, because I love Dave Ramsey's story. He says, what you need is a Honda Civic to get you from point A to point B. That is to get you from home to work and back again. You don't need this $50,000 vehicle to impress people at the stoplight that you'll never see again. All you need is a Honda Civic. And I'll be honest with you. We drove a Honda Civic. My wife and I drove a Honda. My wife had a Honda Civic when we got married, and we sold it because I drove a nicer vehicle than that. Well, it wasn't long after we took Dave Ramsey's class, we bought a Honda Civic again. And we drove a Honda Civic for many years till our family outgrew it. There is a principle there in buying vehicles that needs to be applied. I am going to talk about one more thing about managing. No, I should say this. Do you know that credit can be a huge advantage? I lived in Belize for 5 years, and those people were poor, poor, poor. I mean, poorer than what? I'll like to talk about this tomorrow night again. They were poor. They had enough to eat, but they had nothing. They lived in shacks that we put cows in. And some people put dogs in nicer houses than what they had. Now, Belize is not just an extremely poor country. They are fairly wealthy when third world countries. You know the difference between, I figured out the difference between Belizeans and Americans were that Belizeans could not borrow money at 6%. They paid 20%. I even know of people that borrowed money for a vehicle and paid 40% interest. They couldn't borrow money, basically, and we can. Now, that can be a blessing to us. It can be a curse to us. It can be a curse. If greed is involved, it's a curse. I would like to talk about debt, and I see I've got 5 minutes left to finish this up. Let me see how I can do this. I'm going to talk to you. While I'm on debt, I'm going to talk about two different kinds of debt. This is what they call secured debt. When you borrow money on a house, you have a title, you sign papers, you have documentation, this debt is secured. Hopefully, that if you had to resell it within 5 years, you couldn't make the payments, you'd have to resell it, there would be enough money to basically get you out of debt. You would probably lose the $2,500 plus however many of these payments you would make. But hopefully within 5 years, if inflation keeps going up like it did the last couple years, I know you could have. Sometimes it drops, but that's secured debt. Insecured debt should, please don't throw me out for this one, but it should not happen among us. Okay? Sometimes it will, but it should not happen. Insecured debt is like when you put things on a credit card, and because you don't have the cash in your pocket, so you put it on credit card, and you hope that by the time the credit card bill comes due next month, that the money tree will rain down some money, and you'll have enough to pay for the bill. Well, every time that I've seen this happen, there's always a crop failure. If you don't have the money right now in your pocket, a month from now you probably won't either. And so you buy things, and Gary Miller in his book about finances, Gary Miller says that ice cream cones that are day old have little resale value. Insecure debt has little resale value. It's like you buy things that you can carry home in your pocket. You buy things that have no papers attached to them. And maybe it's just an ice cream cone. And you don't have the cash to pay for it, so you put it on the credit card. That's insecure debt. If you don't have it, you don't buy it, is the rule at our house. It saved us a lot of headache. This is my personal experience. Having food and raiment let us
therewith be content. You know, if I have food, if I have clothing, if I have a house, and if I have a vehicle, even it's a Honda Civic, to get me from point A to point B, that's good enough. If you've heard the saying, live within your means. I don't like that. Live below your means. Then you can save. Did you know that it's been proven, it's been facts given, that if you budget your income, Americans can save 3% and never cut their living status. So I've done some quick figuring for us, and that means that we could save $500 to $2,000 a year if you budget. And yeah, let me tell you about budgeting. I was single at one time, and so I didn't save anything. And then I went to Belize, and all of a sudden I was living on a missionary salary of $30 a day, $30 a month, a dollar a day. And I said, you know what? The mission, of course, paid for all my food. They paid for my flight there and back every 2 years. So you know what? I can live on $30 a day. I buy my clothes, I buy my shoes, I buy everything I need for $30 a month. And so I budgeted. And I mean, I pinched like you wouldn't believe. But I could make it. After I was there long enough, I bought a dog. And then I had to buy dog food. And then I really had to pinch, because it wound up that what I could spend personally on food was less than what I paid for my dog food. I wanted a dog, though, okay? I wanted a Rottweiler. I could make it. Now, every once in a while, visitors would come down. And when visitors come, they would want to go here, and they'd want to go there, and they want to go somewhere else, and they want to go see this. And so I'd take them, and I'd go with them. And then there would be bus fare, and there would be gate fees and whatever else. And then I would run over my budget. And invariably, always, I'd say, boy, I hate this. It really bothers me. But invariably, when they got ready to leave, usually someone would hand me a $20 bill or give me some money. And sure enough, I'd have enough to make it through that month. I've done some estimating, and I don't know how your church is. I have no idea. But our church back home, we are about 50 families. If all of us budgeted and we saved 3% of our income at the end of the year, we would have $70,000 that we could do something with. And none of us would have to cut our lifestyle. Budgeting for us helped us cut out things that weren't necessary. Young people, I am telling you, budget now. It's easier for you to save money now than once you have all these bills. Let me do this quickly. I'll finish. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I got too many. I'll make 10 pounds. Let me show you how it works to budget. You figure out what happens in each pile. I'm going to make these equal. These are 10%. Each one of these are 10%. It doesn't quite work this way. There's a few of these that will only take 8%. There's a few that will take 12. But if you budget, you can already figure out what's going to happen to your paycheck. There's going to be one stack is going to go to Uncle Sam for taxes. That's only right. Jesus says, pay unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Given to Uncle Sam. It is right for you to pay the government. Never cheat the government. They are God's, what's Paul say in Romans? Ministers. You wouldn't cheat me. You wouldn't cheat any of your ministers. Why would you cheat the government? Now, I don't believe in paying extra amount of taxes. I don't believe in doing that. If I can get a refund, we have children, the government gives me a refund. They'll send me a tax refund at the end of the year. From what I pay, I cash that check, tax refund. Another one, you should give 10%. Old Testament teaching, you should give 10% to the Lord. Do that right off the bat. If I should have said, too, this 10% here, if you're employed, your employer probably took it out. Unless you're self-employed like I am, I have to pay estimated tax every 3 months, 4 months, whatever it is. And you're going to have to eat. This is actually 12%. Americans spend at least 12% of their income to eat. So there goes another pound. You got it? Government, the Lord, to eat.
All of you want to drive some kind of rig, even if it's a cheap one, it's going to be, depends on what it is, it's going to take a whole stack. Now, let me tell you one way that you can make that less. If you pay car payments in advance, you can buy that $50,000 rig when you have saved that money. And it won't cost you $90,000. Well, you think you got the rest of that for you? Oh, no. If you have a house, you've got utility bills. It won't quite take 10% for utility bills, but you're going to need them. You got transportation. You got utility. You have got the Lord taken care of. You got to pay, since we have had Obama as a president. Maybe you did this before, which, okay, we did, but you are required to pay medical expense. Some people call it Obamacare. Okay. You still got a little bit left yet. 1, 2, 3, 40% of your paycheck still left. Just in case you're married, now, young people, this is pretty much what you got to put in your pocket. Now, maybe you didn't have to buy that much food. Maybe you're eating off mom and dad's table, and good for you. So that means you got a little more to save. But if you're married, you're going to need a place to live. 25 to 35% of your income is going to go to buy your house. Now, if you work hard, you save your money in advance, and if you decide to live in a cheap little shack somewhere, great, you don't need to. But normally, 25 to 35% in Americans spend on housing. So here we go. If your house is not paid for, there goes one stack of your paycheck. Here goes 20% of your paycheck. Let's stop at 30%. There goes 30% of your paycheck. How many pals did I have up here? 10. Dave Ramsey says you need to save at least 10%. And you wanted to go on that family outing, and you wanted to buy that bow, or a boat, or those golf clubs, or that new thing. You've got 10% left to do that. That's for you to use. Mr. and Mrs. Thing are a very pleasant and successful couple. At least that's the verdict of most people who tend to measure success with a thing meter. When the thing meter is put to work in the life of Mr. and Mrs. Thing, the result is startling. There is the thing he's sitting down on, luxurious and very expensive thing, almost hidden by a large number of other things. Sitting on this thing, sitting on that thing, things to cook on, things to eat from, all shiny and new, things to clean with, things to wash with, and things to eat, and things to muse, and things to give pleasure, and things to watch, and things to play, and things for those hot summer nights, and things for those short, cold winter days, things for the big things in which they live, and things for the garden, and things for the lounge, and things for the kitchen, and things for the bedroom, and things for the four wheels, and things to put on the four wheels, and things that put on top of the four wheels, and things to pull behind the four wheels, and things on two wheels, things to add to the interior of the things of four wheels, things. Are there any value? May God bless you.